Following program is intended for mature audiences.
They used to bounce messages across the earth.
Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show.
Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows?
Who knows? Those are the planes of silence.
Veritas, live from Burbank, California.
Hi friends, Tom Savino here with Savino Veritas. Thanks for joining us again this Thursday evening. Well, the most rotten banana in the bunch, Steve Banana, has fallen off the tree and maybe used for a smoothie from now on, but we'll see what happens with that. I don't know how authentic that is or what's going on with that, but you're listening to Savino Veritas, the fine wine of select gripes from the Gripe Wine here in Burbank.
Savino Veritas.
Total fabrication.
The Gripes of Rat. Arfos in Brooklyn welcomes Bill the Bull Testosterone.
Hey, Brooklyn, welcome to Barfos. Bill the Bull Testosterone here. You know, you guys know I hate T-Rump. You know I hate him. I got lots of company. Hey, yeah. You over there, too, yeah. Any Trump supporters here? No, they won't admit it even if they're here. I know. I wouldn't do it either. But you know, there's many things to criticize the president for, this guy. But I was thinking, you know, I have a lot in common with him. I got a lot of common with him. So let me tell you what I have in common with T-Rump, all right? I love television. I have almost zero understanding of international politics. I have not exercised in 2017. Or 16. Or 50. I have never read the second half of Infinite Jest. I've never read The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump. I know it's silly and will never happen, but I secretly wish Barack Obama was my best friend. Hey, Obama, man. Give me five. I've been scared every day since November the 8th, 2016. I'm not as good at having sex as I think I am. Hey, Josephine, ask her, she'll tell you. But don't ask her, no, don't. Keep it on the down low, Joe. I am related to Jewish people whom I don't understand. A waiter once forgot to charge me for a drink at a restaurant, and I did not tell him to adjust the check. What else I got in common with T-Rump? Oh, Melania Trump has no interest in having sex with me. When I get really stressed out, I like to watch the film Finding Dory. I recently internet stalked the people who bullied me in middle school. I need more therapy than I currently undergo. I look awful in hats. Hillary Clinton is much smarter than I am, and I know it. What else in common with the T-Rump? I'd rather win an Emmy than be in politics. I would rather win a free drink at a coffee bean than be in politics. Sometimes I wish that dogs could talk. I wonder what they would say. Not to harp on it, but Finding Dory has a plot line that I find easy to follow. I'm not on my correct medication. What else in common with T-Rump? I have a recurring nightmare in which my father tells me that he is not proud of me. I've never had a one-to-one conversation with Tiffany Trump that lasted for longer than 10 minutes. I'm pretty sure I'm not gay, but every once in a while I see an attractive man and I think, geez, that guy is good looking. What else I find? I hope they make a sequel to Finding Dory. I think Paul Ryan's a fucking winner. I will never understand what it's like to be a Syrian refugee. Anything else? A couple of things. It's embarrassing to admit, but all I want deeply on any given day and any given hour is to have someone look me in the eye and tell me with complete and profound sincerity, I love you. Forget about it, eh? I've never been democratically elected president of the United States. That's a lot I have with T-Rump, a lot in common with T-Rump. It's Bill, the Bull, the Testosterone. Resist, people.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Many in the resistance are calling for new elections, and there's good reason for it. Let's listen to Keith Olbermann as to why or why not.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. So, new election? Our last one was influenced by a foreign power, likely coordinated with the victorious presidential campaign. Influenced, then likely coordinated, that is, barring the most extraordinary and unexpected vindication, one so sweeping that not even Trump's most ardent supporters have successfully hinted at it, let alone articulated it. So, new election? Obviously, it will be impossible ever to prove that Russian cyber warfare, an internationally managed disinformation campaign, targeted marketing that may have even been tied to hacked and stolen voter registration records, and maybe even laundered money, caused the 70,000 Americans who decided the Electoral College count to actually vote the way they did, and that they would not have voted otherwise. We cannot examine the brains of every voter in this country, and Lord knows that with the ones who voted for Trump, we wouldn't have much to examine anyway. But the mechanics of the interference, and let's call it what that was, a Russian act of war, a virtual invasion of the United States with the possible collaboration and support of Americans who would be, by legal definition, traitors to this country. The mechanics of how that war was successfully waged against our election and our freedoms and our way of life, that can be proved. So, new election? Not only are those who oppose Donald Trump getting closer to connecting every link in that chain, but each time he opens his mouth or his Twitter account about he was wiretapped and how his campaign was spied upon, he is also connecting every link in that chain. Humpty Dumpty over there is simply so focused on his unquenchable, existential need to make himself the victim that he's begun to resemble the proverbial defendant charged with killing his parents, who then complains he's being persecuted even though he's an orphan. So, new election? There is no philosophical construct in which, were the Russian conspiracy proved and Trump impeached and removed from office, that the Republican Party should be rewarded with continued control of the White House. The Republicans not only had ample opportunity to derail Trump's nomination and even his victory in the Electoral College, but he gave them a dozen reasons and opportunities to do the right thing. They did not do the right thing. To hell with them. So, new election? Well, we don't do it that way. We've had a presidential vote of some kind every fourth year since 1788. We have held a presidential election when nobody knew what the rules were and only seven states had any popular voting. We have held a presidential election while the British were forming a blockade of our ports. We have held a presidential election in the middle of a civil war every 4 years. You want a new election? You will get it in 2020. And none of that is explicitly in the Constitution. Article 2, Section 1, Clause 6, in case of the removal of the president from office. It is amazingly vague. It was later clarified by the 25th Amendment, but the pertinent part is as vague today as when the framers wrote it. Quoting, in case of the removal of the president from office or of his death, resignation, or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve on the vice president, and the Congress may by law provide for the case of removal, death, resignation, or inability, both of the president and vice president, declaring what officer shall then act as president, and such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed or a president shall be elected. Until the disability be removed or a president shall be elected. Not until the term of the elected president shall elapse. The Constitution specifies that an elected president serves 4 years. In the scenario in which the elected president is out, it specifies nothing about how long the new president will serve. No every 4 years from an election, no serving out the term. That's just the custom. And in fact, the first time a president did not make it to the end of his term, when William Henry Harrison died after just 31 days in office in 1841, there were those who argued that the vice president, John Tyler, should act as caretaker-in-chief until a new election could be held. While this was being debated, Tyler simply had himself sworn in as president and basically told his opponents to try to do something about it. That, the Tyler precedent, as they call it, is the entirety of the reason that President Mike Pence would presumably finish Trump's term, or that President Paul Ryan would presumably finish Trump's term if Trump and Pence were swallowed up by the Russian scandal, or President Orrin Hatch, who's third in line, or President Rex Tillerson, who's fourth, or President Betsy DeVos, who's 15th. President Betsy DeVos. So, new election? A new presidential election before 2020 might be constitutional, though presumably politically impossible, because some legislation of some kind would have to be passed by the Senate or the House and presumably affirmed by the Supreme Court, and all three bodies, of course, would also have to be hit by lightning simultaneously to knock enough patriotism and morality into the Republicans who control them to get them to actually hold a 2017 or 2018 presidential election. However, this could still be opening Pandora's box, like turning off all the gravity, if we somehow were able to break the tradition, the Tyler precedent. The industry into which we have made politics and government in this country could conceivably start to generate a new presidential election every 6 months. Elect a president, swear him in, impeach him and his successors, pass legislation for another new election, lather, rinse, repeat. I mean, imagine what the Republicans would do with this. Well, of course, we already kind of know. If a Democratic president had been elected as part of a secret Russian war against this country, the Republicans would impeach that president and the vice president and everybody on the Democratic chain of succession and embrace the cry of new elections now rising from the streets. Wall Street and K Street, specifically. Hell, in 1998, Newt Gingrich reportedly had dreams that he would impeach and remove Bill Clinton. Then President Al Gore would pardon Clinton, and then Gingrich could then impeach Gore for pardoning Clinton. That would have made the Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, president, instead of what he is now, a guy whose last presidential campaign defaulted on debts of $4,600,000. You missed the sunrise today because somebody put something in your drink last night. You can't go back in time to see it, and you can't declare there's going to be a second sunrise at 4 p.m. You have to wait. But you do not have to wait 3.5 years. So, new election? It would be unprecedented and dangerous, and unprecedented and dangerous is where we are now with this disloyal punk in the White House. Thus, to me, we should keep a new election on the table, despite the risk, and more obviously, despite the near impossibility that it would be politically. However, if you want a guaranteed new election to take the government out of the hands of these thugs, if you want, after Trump's removal, to keep our freedoms safe from the 14th in line to succeed him, that would be President Rick Perry, who would serve just before President Betsy DeVos. If you want a new election for sure, you have a bunch of them this November. I don't care if it's the two state governorships up for grabs in the fall, or the mayoralties in 21 different cities, or balloting for the head of whoever in your city government supervises the Visiting Nurse Association. Throw the Republicans who profited from this, and they have all profited from this, and they all knew who they signed on with. Throw them out and put their party out of business this fall and next year in the midterms. Concentrate on voting out every single Republican from the House and Senate in 2018. Run them into the ground. So, new election, that's your new election. Matter of fact, that's also your new sunrise. Resist.
I've been thinking about what to call you and blowhards to call.
Resistance continues to resist this insane clown president. As you probably know, I was a high school teacher and actually still am. And this news story from the Washington Post pleased me. The headline is, "These high school journalists investigated a new principal's credentials. Days later, she resigned," by Samantha Schmidt of the Washington Post. On the page where the story exists is a wonderful photo of six students, four girls, two guys, in the journalism class of Pittsburgh High School in East Pittsburgh. I'll read you in comment on this story. Connor Baltazar, 17, was in the middle of a study hall when he was called into a meeting with his high school newspaper advisor. A group of reporters and editors from the student newspaper, the Booster Redux at Pittsburgh High School in southeastern Kansas, had gathered to talk about Amy Robertson, who was hired as the high school's head principal on March 6th. Interesting wording. The high school's a head principal. Well, I guess meaning there's assistant principals and vice principals. This is Savino Veritas, and we are for mature audiences or immature audiences, depending on how you look at it. But I had a different image when I heard of head principal. Having seen pictures of Miss Robertson. I will give you no further comment on that. I was just glad that she was not my head principal. The student journalist had begun researching Robertson and quickly found some discrepancies in her education's credentials. For one, when they researched Corlins, Corlins, Corlins University, the private university where Robertson said she got her master's and doctorate degree years ago, the website didn't work. They found no evidence that it was an accredited university. So, you know, this is equivalent, it's a kind of a place equivalent to the Trump University. All these private universities, which of course everything, the whole world is being privatized thanks to the the asshole in charge. And Betsy DeVos is well on her way of privatizing the educational system in the United States. And everything is being privatized. The Environmental Protection Agency. Just on that note, by the way, Steve Banana of the White House has stepped down from the National Security Council because he has already successfully, less than 100 days, fewer than 100 days, as they say in correct English, in fewer than 100 days, Steve Banana has been able to successfully meet his goal of destroying the Security Council, and is on his way now to destroy other government agencies. And this is not satire. This is just his goal, is to destroy. This is a stated goal of his, and he is destroying things. Back to the story of the high school. The students began digging into a weeks-long, here's a quote from, quote from Baltazar, told the Washington Post, quote, "There were some things that just didn't quite add up. The students began digging into weeks-long investigation that would result in an article published Friday questioning the legitimacy of the principal's degrees and her work as an education consultant. On Tuesday night, Robertson resigned." Real news, real facts, not alternative facts, real facts dug up by real journalists, and in this case, high school journalists, has uncovered the truth. This is Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth, the fine wine of select gripes. And one of my gripes is that we have a president who has said, if I went out on Fifth Avenue and shot somebody, they'd still elect me. And that is the truth. That is the sad truth. I don't know about right now, because right now, thankfully, he is on the downslide at a 35% approval rating, the lowest ever for a president who is in office for fewer than 100 days. Deservedly so. And he's, hopefully people are waking up to his maniacal destruction for whatever reason, reasons only his small, sick, diseased brain knows. I'm convinced the man is suffering from neurosyphilis. Anyway, had Amy Robertson taken on the Trumpian posture of just admitting that her credentials were false, and she didn't have to resign. She could just say, "So what? If I stood in front of, if I stood out in Fifth Avenue, if Pittsburgh has a Fifth Avenue, and shot everybody, I'd still be principal." Well, fortunately, it doesn't work in all cases, and I hope that trend continues. And I hope we were able to recover this nation, but we'll see. But back to the story of these wonderful journalists at this high school. Quote, "In light of the issues that arose, Dr. Robertson felt it was in the best interest of the district to resign her position," end quote. Pittsburgh Community Schools announced in a statement, quote, "The board has agreed to accept her resignation," end quote. Boy, is that couched in euphemistic terms. In light of the issues that arose. Well, those issues arose because of real journalists, albeit teenagers, real journalists in a high school. The resignation thrust the student newspaper staff into local, state, and national news. In fact, here it is internationally on Savino Veritas. "With professional journalists nationwide applauding the students for asking tough questions and promoting change in their administration, everybody kept telling them, stop poking your nose where it doesn't belong," end quote. Newspaper advisor Emily Smith told the Post. "But with the encouragement of the superintendent, the students persisted." Well, that's good. That's good. Good to hear that there were adults who applauded this and supported it. That is very good to hear. Quote, "They were at a loss that something that was so easy for them to see
was waiting to be noticed by adults, end quote, Emily Smith said. In the Booster Redux article, a team of six students, five juniors, one senior, revealed that Corlins University had been portrayed in a number of articles as a diploma mill, a Trump University type place, that's my comment, a place where people can buy a degree, diploma, or certificates. Corlins is not accredited by the United States Department of Education, the students reported. The Better Business Bureau's website says Corlins' physical address is unknown, and the school isn't a BBB-accredited institution. That's the Better Business Bureau. Now, another comment here. I suppose, had this been investigated further, had this happened next year, when Bessie DeVos gets her claws into shredding Department of Education, the United States Department of Education, this institution would probably be accredited, but since it's private and money is at its root, it would undoubtedly be accepted as an accredited institution under Bessie DeVos's wonderful guidance. Back to the story. Quote, all of this was completely overlooked, Balthazar said. All of the shining reviews did not have these crucial pieces of information. You would expect your authority figures to find this, end quote. Robertson, Amy Robertson, the head principal, had been living in Dubois for more than 20 years before she was hired for the position. I wonder if she has any Russian ties. She said she most recently worked as the chief executive in an education consulting firm known as Atticus IS Consultants there in Dubois. In a conference call with the student journalists, Robertson, quote, presented incomplete answers, conflicting dates, and inconsistencies in her responses, end quote, the students reported. She said she attended Corlins before it lost accreditation, the Booster Redux reported. When contacted by the Kansas City Star after the publication of the student's article, Robertson said all three of her degrees, quote, have been authenticated by the U.S. government, end quote. She declined to comment directly on students' questions about her credentials, quote, because their concerns are not based on facts, she said, end quote. In an emergency faculty meeting Tuesday, the superintendent said Robertson was unable to produce a transcript confirming her undergraduate degree from the University of Tulsa, Smith said. During the course of their reporting, the students spent weeks reaching out to educational institutions and accreditation agencies to collaborate, to corroborate Robertson's background, some even working through spring break. Their advisor, Smith, had to recuse herself from the story because she was on the committee that hired Robertson. So the students sought the help of Eric Thompson, executive director of the Kansas Scholastic Press Association, and other local and national journalists and experts. Under Kansas law, high school journalists are protected from administrative censorship. I wonder how long that's going to be in place. Bessie DeVos, get on the job and make sure that is eradicated immediately. Quote, the kids are treated as professionals, Smith said. But with that freedom came a major responsibility to get the story right, Smith said. It also meant overcoming a natural hesitancy many students have to question authority. Quote, at the very beginning, it was a little bit exciting, end quote, Balthazar said. She goes on, it was like in the movies, a big city journalist chasing down a lead, end quote. But as the students began delving deeper into the story, keeping notes on a whiteboard, quote, it really started hitting me that this is a much bigger deal, end quote, Balthazar said. The students were among those packed into school boardroom Tuesday night when the school board president announced Robertson's resignation. After the announcement, a parent in the audience stood up and asked school officials if they would be recognizing the student journalist for uncovering crucial details about Robertson's background. The superintendent said he would be meeting with the students Wednesday to personally thank them. And that was yesterday. Quote, "We've broken out of our comfort zone so much," Baltazar said. Quote, "To know that the administration saw that and respected that, it was a really great moment for us," end quote. After local news broke that Robertson had resigned, numerous national journalists, including the Washington Post's David Fahrenthold, tweeted the student's story congratulating them for their work. Holy crap, Baltazar thought. Why are these people paying attention to this little journalism story from southeast Kansas? End quote. There's a little more to the story, but I'll comment on that. I'll tell you, Baltazar, this is big. It's big, especially in the environment of this nation that it believes fake news, that has a president that calls real news fake news. We now have a society, thanks to Steve Banana, who's on to destroying some other government agency right now. Thanks to Steve Banana, Steve Miller, and the friends at Breitbart, the Nazi disgusting place that is under investigation by the FBI because of their Russian ties. Because of that, Ms. Baltazar, this little story in southeast Kansas is a huge story. And it gives hope. It gives us hope. Please, please continue. Maybe the United States, maybe the Western culture in the world can be saved by you. Let's go on to the story. While a high school junior was leaving track practice Tuesday night, he learned in a group message with his newspaper staff that Todd Wallach, a reporter for the Boston Globe's Spotlight team, had tweeted the student's story saying, quote, "Great investigative work by high school journalists," end quote. Baltazar sat in his car in the parking lot and immediately called his mom to tell her the news. I apologize because throughout the story I've been referring to Baltazar as Miss Baltazar, and it is Mr. Baltazar, and sorry about that. Back to the story, which is just a little more to go. Quote, "I honestly thought they were joking at first." And just to remind you, everyone, this is Tom Savino from Savino Veritas, and I may be joking, but I'm never kidding here in Savino Veritas. Back to what Mr. Baltazar has said, the Booster Redux staff had watched the movie Spotlight in class last year, Baltazar said. Quote, "It was awesome to know that such respected members of the journalism community had our backs," end quote. I'm glad to hear that. It vindicates me as a high school teacher that has often shown inspiring movies, at least movies that I thought were inspiring, and I think my students agreed, as some principals, head principals indeed, throughout my career would criticize me and critique me, my teaching, for showing movies instead of teaching. But an inspiring movie like Spotlight, placed in the right place in terms of the chronology of the curriculum, the chronology of curriculum, there's another book for Frank Attolo, the chronology of the curriculum, it placed properly, an inspiring movie is very educational and really is visceral and gets into the student and changes their lives. It does. It can. And has, I think, for Mr. Baltazar. After graduation, Baltazar said he hopes to pursue a degree in creative writing or filmmaking. Even though he doesn't necessarily plan to stick with journalism, Baltazar said the past few weeks had been surreal, quote, surreal. Quote, "Most high schoolers would never get even close to an opportunity to get to experience something like this, he said. A very inspiring story from the Washington Post. Thank you, students. Keep up the real news. Keep it up. This is Savino Veritas. I'm Tom Savino.
It's the Fabulous Geek Show.
All tied up, spread eagle. No.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards.
JuicedTalk.com.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth. This is Artist D.
And Anne-Marie from Up All Night on 4Culture Radio.
Have you got any wine, Anne-Marie?
I'm completely intoxicated.
We love to wine. We drink wine. We listen to Savino Veritas every week at JuiceTalk.com. Don't we love Tom?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
Thanks so much, Dee and Anne-Marie from Up All Night. You could hear that. And Savino Veritas and Cotolo Chronicles and Velvet Steel 24-7 on a Too Cool for a School website, JuicedTalk.com. Our dishonest president won among 7 editorials from the Los Angeles Times about President Donald Trump. The first, our dishonest president, April 2nd, 2017, Los Angeles Times. It was no secret during the campaign that Donald Trump was a narcissist and a demagogue who used fear and dishonesty to appeal to the worst in American voters. The Times called him unprepared and unsuited for the job he was seeking and said his election would be a catastrophe. Still, nothing prepared us for the magnitude of this train wreck. Like millions of other Americans, we clung to a slim hope that the new president would turn out to be all noise and bluster, or that the people around him in the White House would act as a check on his worst instincts, or that he would be sobered and transformed by the awesome responsibilities of office. Instead, 70-some days in, and with about 1,400 to go before his term is completed, it is increasingly clear that those hopes were misplaced. In a matter of weeks, President Trump has taken dozens of real-life steps that, if they are not reversed, will rip families apart, foul rivers and pollute the air, intensify the calamitous effects of climate change, and profoundly weaken the system of American public education for all. His attempt to de-insure millions of people who had finally received health coverage, and along the way enact a massive transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich, has been put on hold for the moment, but he is proceeding with his efforts to defang the government's regulatory agencies and bloat the Pentagon's budget, even as he supposedly retreats from the global stage. Quote, "It is impossible to know where his presidency will lead or how much damage he will do to our nation. End quote. These are immensely dangerous developments which threaten to weaken this country's moral standing in the world, imperil the planet, and reverse years of slow but steady gains by marginalized or impoverished Americans. But chilling as they are, these radically wrong-headed policy choices are not, in fact, the most frightening aspect of the Trump presidency. What is most worrisome about Trump is Trump himself. He's a man so unpredictable, so reckless, so petulant, so full of blind self-regard, so untethered to reality, that it is impossible to know where his presidency will lead or how much damage he will do to our nation. His obsession with his own fame, wealth, and success, his determination to vanquish enemies real and imagined, his craving for adulation, these traits were, of course, at the very heart of his scorched earth outsider campaign. Indeed, some of them helped get him elected. But in a real presidency in which he wields unimaginable power, they are nothing short of disastrous. Although his policies are, for the most part, variations on classic Republican positions, many of which would have been undertaken by a President Ted Cruz or President Marco Rubio, they become far more dangerous in the hands of this imprudent and erratic man. Many Republicans, for instance, support tighter border security and a tougher response to illegal immigration. But Trump's cockamamie border wall, his impractical campaign promise to deport all 11 million people living in the country illegally, and his blight of disregard for the effect of such proposals on the U.S. relationship with Mexico turn a very bad policy into an appalling one. In the days ahead, the Los Angeles Times editorial board will look more closely at the new president, with a special attention to three troubling traits. 1. Trump's shocking lack of respect for those fundamental rules and institutions on which our government is based. Since January 20th, he has repeatedly disparaged and challenged those entities that have threatened his agenda, stoking public distrust of essential institutions in a way that undermines faith in American democracy. He has questioned the qualifications of judges and the integrity of their decisions, rather than acknowledge that even the president must submit to the rule of law. He has clashed with his own intelligence agencies, demeaned government workers, and questioned the credibility of the electoral system and the Federal Reserve. He has lashed out at journalists, declaring them enemies of the people, rather than defending the importance of a critical, independent, free press. His contempt for the rule of law and the norms of government are palpable. 2. His utter lack of regard for truth. Whether it is the easily disprovable boast about the size of his inauguration crowd, or his unsubstantiated assertion that Barack Obama bugged the Trump Tower, the new president regularly muddies the waters of fact and fiction. It's difficult to know whether he actually can't distinguish the real from the unreal, or whether he intentionally conflates the two to befuddle voters, deflect criticism, and undermine the very idea of objective truth. Whatever the explanation, he is encouraging Americans to reject facts, to disrespect science, documents, nonpartisanship, and the mainstream media, and instead of simply take positions on the basis of ideology and preconceived notions, this is a recipe for a divided country in which differences grow deeper and rational compromise becomes impossible. And 3, his scary willingness to repeat alt-right conspiracy theories, racist memes, and crackpot out of the mainstream ideas. Again, it is not clear whether he believes them or merely uses them. But to cling to the disproven, quote, alternative, end quote, facts, to retweet racists, to make unverifiable or false statements about rigged elections and fraudulent voters, to buy into discredited conspiracy theories first floated on fringe websites and in supermarket tabloids. These are all of a piece of the Barack Obama birther claptrap that Trump has peddled years ago and which brought him to political prominence. It is deeply alarming that a president would lend the credibility of his office to ideas that have been rightly rejected by politicians from both major political parties. Where will this end? Will Trump moderate his crazier campaign positions as time passes, or will he provoke confrontation with Iran, North Korea, or China, or disobey a judge's orders, or order a soldier to violate the Constitution? Or alternately, will the system itself, the Constitution, the courts, the permanent bureaucracy, the Congress, the Democrats, the marches in the streets, protect us from him as he alienates more and more allies at home and abroad, steps on his own message, and creates chaos at the expense of his ability to accomplish his goals? Already, Trump's job approval rating has been hovering in the mid-30s, according to the Gallup poll, a shockingly low level of support for a new president. And that was before his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, offered to cooperate last week with congressional investigators looking into the connection between the Russian government and the Trump campaign. Quote, "Those who oppose the new president's reckless and heartless agenda must make their voices heard," end quote. On Inauguration Day, we wrote on this page that it was not yet time to declare a state of, quote, wholesale panic, end quote, or to call for blanket non-cooperation with the Trump administration, despite plenty of dispiriting signals. That is still our view. The role of the rational opposition is to stand up for the rule of law, the electoral process, the peaceful transfer of power, and the role of institutions. We should not underestimate the resilience of a system in which laws are greater than individuals and voters are as powerful as presidents. This nation survived Andrew Jackson and Richard Nixon. It survived slavery. It survived devastating wars. Most likely, it will survive again. But if it is to do so, those who oppose the new president's reckless and heartless agenda must make their voices heard. Protesters must raise their banners. Voters must turn out for elections. Members of Congress, including and especially Republicans, must find the political courage to stand up to Trump. Courts must safeguard the Constitution. State legislators must pass laws to protect their citizens and their policies from federal meddling. All of us who are in the business of holding leaders accountable must redouble our efforts to defend the truth from his cynical assaults. The United States is not a perfect country, and it has a great distance to go before it fully achieves its goal of liberty and equality. But preserving what works and defending the rules and values on which democracy depends are a shared responsibility. Everyone has a role to play in this drama.
Good afternoon, everyone, and Crunch Granola coming to you from the stadium in Washington, D.C., where we have the opening day of the 2017 political baseball season with the Democats versus the Republicans. And Chuck Schumer on the mound for the Democrats. With me today is the color announcer, Wicked Hop.
Hi, Crunch. It's great to be with you today on this opening day of Major League Baseball, especially when I'm the color announcer. It's going to be a challenging opening day for the Democrats because of the rule changes. We are in the Republicans' home field, and in the Republicans' home field, of course, especially with the new Trumpire, Neil Gorsuch, the rules could change at any time in favor, of course, of the Republicans.
Yes, yes, there's been some understanding about that. What Wicked is talking about, of course, is the rules change as the game is going along. Since this is the Republicans' home field, and they get to call and change the rules. So, who do we have up first here? Let's get to the first pitch of opening day. And Paul Ryan throws a high inside fastball for strike. The inside corner is up at bat. Corey Booker. Ryan taking the ball, rubbing it down, getting ready for the next pitch to Corey Booker. And here it comes. Booker slams one. It's good. It drops for a base hit. Oh, no. Right fielder Mitch McConnell throws out Corey Booker at first base. That was a close play. Going to have a replay on that?
Crunch, don't expect many replays today as the Republicans are home field advantage and with Neil Gorsuch as the Trumpire, there would be no need to really review the decisions as Neil Gorsuch will just change the decisions.
Yes, I guess there won't be any replays today since the Republicans are home field and they get to call and change the rules as they go. Now up to bat is Nancy Pelosi. Oh, she knocks that one into left field and went out. Oh, caught. Caught by Evan Nunez. He's not rushing any plays. Taking his time. And up third for the Democrats.
Looking at a replay myself, Crunch, I see that Nunez did trap the ball and he did not catch it cleanly. It is really a base hit for Nancy Pelosi. However, Neil Gorsuch, the Trumpire, has called it an out.
Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, right-handed batter. I come to the right side. Here is a pitch. Ooh, that's a ball inside. Almost hit Sanders.
Well, clearly, Senator Sanders is batting from the right side. He's a right-handed batter, right-handed thrower. However, the Republicans program, and as they list Senator Sanders as an extreme left batter, an extreme left thrower, extreme left. This is part of their new programming of the alternative facts.
And here's the next pitch of Bernie Sanders from Paul Ryan. And it knocks back right directly to Paul Ryan. And the Democrats are out. 1-2-3 coming up now. The Republicans will take out their... And the Democrats are out. 1-2-3. On opening day. It's a beautiful day here in Washington, D.C., and that's a strike. A beautiful pitch by the Democrat pitcher, Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi threw that pitch beautifully.
In case you're wondering, Chuck Schumer was supposed to pitch for the Democrats, but was ejected during the inning change by Neil Gorsuch for questioning the Trumpire's call.
As Senator Ted Cruz takes a pitch that he could have hit, but there's a lot of spin on that ball.
If the Democrats have any chance of winning today, they're going to have to take a page out of the Republicans' playbook and spin everything. Everything should be spun. Everything should be spinning. Otherwise, the Democrats have no chance.
Let's go now to the second pitch of the ball game. Second pitch. Oh, Pelosi get another high one. It got two strikes on Cruz. Two strikes on Cruz. Can Pelosi strike out Cruz? Let's see. She struck him out. Nancy Pelosi strikes out Ted Cruz with a high, hard one on the inside corner. And Cruz doesn't like that, and he says he would like to do that over again. Today's Trumpire is Neil Gorsuch. Neil Gorsuch is the home plate Trumpire. Up second for the... And Pelosi's really throwing the heat as the second batter for the Pelicans.
Not too surprising that Trump hired Gorsuch ruled against Cruz because everybody hates Cruz.
Governor Chris Christie. Oh, takes a ball inside. That was inside. It gets with Chris Christie at the plate. Inside is a big area and almost hit Christie, but Pelosi throws the next pitch for Christie, and here it is. And Christie hits one deep. Oh, caught by the shortstop. And a deep out. Wow, the shortstop made it all the way to the outfield, and there's Elizabeth Warren making that catch. There's two outs for the Republicans. And two outs for the Republicans, and up third net for the Republicans is Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell takes ball one high inside. Strike one as he took a swing at that sinker that Pelosi threw. One ball, one strike. Ball two on the inside corner to McConnell. We're in the bottom of the first. There's no score right now between the Republicans and the Democrats. That's right down the middle, and Mitch McConnell just looked at that one. He would like to perhaps recuse himself. And up on deck is the cleanup hitter for the Republicans. We now have a full count on McConnell, 3-2. A full count, 3 balls, 2 strikes, and here's Pelosi's deciding pitch. And McConnell knocks from the center field. That's a base hit. McConnell beats it out at first in the throw as a center fielder for the Democrats throws it to first base. Cleanup hitter for the Republicans is pitcher Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan is up there taking Nancy Pelosi's pitch. Right, he just swung at that high, hard one on the inside as it moved inside. Had a nice movement on that pitch. Strike two. Pelosi's got 0-2 on Ryan with two outs in the bottom of the first. There's no score right now.
Mitch McConnell, of course, is taking a big lead off first base as he is a threat to steal. He certainly has a history of that. He is a big, big asset to the Pelicans, of course, and with Nancy Pelosi pitching. If they switch pitchers, McConnell, of course, could switch sides as he is a switch hitter.
Strike three. What is that? Neil Gorsuch, the Trumpire, says that there will be a do-over for that pitch, even though clearly Ryan swung and missed, not even near it, and the Democrats are walking off the field, and they're walking off the field, and it looks like the Republicans are just going to hit the ball with no fielders. So it is strike one as Paul Ryan gets another shot at a chance to hit because of Neil Gorsuch, the Trumpire, who said, get up again despite your striking out. And Pelosi's going to slow it down with her changeup. Ryan, swing that ball. It's gone. It is gone. That's a home run. And what is this? Gorsuch? Neil Gorsuch is ruling that Mitch McConnell, who was on first base, should score and Paul Ryan scores. But he's also saying that Chris Christie, who was up before and the leadoff batter for the Republicans, come out of the dugout and run the bases, and he's going to call that a grand slam. That's a grand slam. Well, it looks like the Republicans win 4-0 on a grand slam home run by Paul Ryan after Neil Gorsuch ruled in favor of the Republicans. Democrats walking off the field, and Neil Gorsuch is calling the game as a Democrat, and the Democrats forfeited. I hope you enjoyed opening day here in Washington, D.C. Stay with us for more rule changes in Major League Baseball. This is Crunch Cronulla.
Listening, Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth, the fine wine of select gripes. Join us every Thursday, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at 148.ca/1 and 24/7 at the Too Cool for School website, juicedtalk.com. Resist!
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
Now, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.